Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1896 with a release date of December 13th, 2013 follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Colorado hams coordinate rescue of a vehicle that runs off an icy road. Radio Arcala loses its prized 330-foot-high, 160-meter beam antenna in a fierce windstorm. 6 meters comes to all hams in New Zealand. 2014 will host a pair of contest universities in the United States. And the Weather Channel celebrates Skywarn Appreciation Day. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1896 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
Several Colorado hams and a linked repeater system made possible the successful rescue of a group whose vehicle had slid off an icy roadway. It happened Friday night, December 6th, when Cody Fowler, ND0A, and his family were on their way home to Cotopaxi from the city of Pueblo. Suddenly, Fowler noticed that the lights of the vehicle behind him had disappeared. Suspecting a problem, ND0A turned around, parked, and saw that a red SUV had driven off the road into an icy ditch. Ironically, while he and his family had just purchased new cell phones, none were charged or activated, so he turned to amateur radio.
What you can see, emergency, November Delta Zero Alpha.
Cody.
Somebody call 911. We got a rollover accident up here on Copper Gulch about, I'm guessing, 4 or 5 miles off of, up from Highway 50. Copy?
Copy. Amanda, can you handle that?
Relaying the information to authorities was Amanda Alden, K1DDN. Alden called 911, and for the next hour, she kept a cell phone in one hand and a radio in the other, relaying messages between dispatch and Fowler.
Actually, they're going southbound, went off the left side of the road, roll over. And little girl's possible concussion. She shook up, a little nauseated.
So, Cody, you're going to stay with them until emergency help arrives?
Affirmative, I'll stay.
A few minutes later came word from another ham on the system that help was on its way.
Amanda, they just dispatched an officer on the old sheriff analog system, WD0WDM.
While everyone at the accident site was waiting for help to arrive, ND0A, along with K1DDN, K0JSC, and several others kept the lines of communications flowing.
ND0A, K0JSC, do you still have the individuals in your vehicle?
Jeff, I've got one of the young ladies that was in the vehicle. The other passengers are split up amongst the other two vehicles that stopped.
From the time Alden made the 911 emergency call until the Colorado State Patrol arrived, it took about 40 minutes. It was followed by the Deer Mountain Fire and Rescue and the Fremont County Sheriff. According to Alden, two of the victims ended up being transferred to a local hospital. Their condition at airtime is unknown.
I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, with some breaking news out of the nation's capital. That's where the House Energy and Commerce Committee has approved FCC process reform legislation. Republican Communications and Technology Committee Chairman Representative Greg Walden, W7EQI of Oregon, and Subcommittee Democratic Ranking Member California Representative Anna Eshoo earlier had submitted an amendment to H.R. 3675, one that they said presents the Commission with a framework to bring additional transparency and predictability to the agency. In response to the committee passage, FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai said that he applauds the committee for passing by voice vote on H.R. 3675, which is officially known as the Federal Communications Commission Process Reform Act of 2013. He also heaped praise on the leaders of the Subcommittee on Communications and Technology for their bipartisan efforts to advance what he termed as this important legislation. The measure now moves on to the full House of Representatives for approval. Don?
A European windstorm named Oscari has brought down the famed 330-foot-high Radio Arcala 160- and 80-meter tower and antenna at Finland's OH-8X station, this after only 5 years of the spectacular low-band antenna's existence. The storm, with gusts up to 80 miles per hour, not only demolished the 40-ton amateur radio array, It also caused power outages for more than 200,000 households in Finland. Fortunately, nobody was hurt, and the six other ham radio antenna towers at the Radio Arkala site survived the storm. None of the buildings that are part of the station suffered any damage. As we go to air, inspectors are trying to evaluate the cause of the failure. One suspicion is that the automation designed to enable the array to find its most comfortable position in high winds somehow locked up and caused the structure to corkscrew and tumble to the ground. Up until its failure, professional engineering efforts had ensured the survival of the structure. Even with the demise of the 160 and 80-meter directional array, life goes on at Radio Arkala. As such, you may soon hear Santa Claus from the north of Finland bringing you the joy of Christmas in the form of station OF9X. It plans to beam its signal over the North Pole on 20 meters by capitalizing on the famous polar path during the holiday season. Hams in New Zealand now have access to the entire 6-meter band. This after the last analog television broadcast transmitter was switched off November 30th. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, with details.
Vaughan Henderson, ZL1VH, is the president of the New Zealand Association of Radio Transmitters, NZART, which is this nation's national amateur radio society. Writing in the December 6th issue of NZART's bi-weekly e-newsletter, HQ Infoline, he says that from midnight on December 6th, ZL Hams had permission to operate on the 6-meter band with the full legal power limit of 1 kilowatt. ZL1VH notes that he's been told that some amateurs were waiting for an official note from the New Zealand telecommunications regulator, Radio Spectrum Management, but this will not be forthcoming. But in a conversation he had on December 5th with the Radio Spectrum licensing manager, he received confirmation that the whole of the 6-meter band is now available to New Zealand hams, so to go out and make good use of it. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, down under in Nelson, New Zealand.
It will be interesting to see if the 2014 6-meter spring and summer DX season brings more ZL calls to U.S. shores. British telecommunications regulator Ofcom has published a statement confirming its plans to amend current regulations to allow the use of a wider range of transmission standards for 11-meter citizens band radio in the UK. These will include amplitude modulation, double sideband, and single sideband transmission standards, which will bring the UK in line with other European countries. Ofcom's proposed changes will also allow United Kingdom CB users the right to run a higher power output than holders of the nation's entry-level foundation amateur radio license. 95% of respondents to the Ofcom proposal supported the use of AM and SSB. Currently, CB in the United Kingdom is an FM-only service. The Democratic Republic of the Congo looks ready to reinstate limited ham radio operations. The Ohio Penn DX newsletter says there are several reports stating that after 3 years of negotiations with the Congolese government and gaining official approval from the nation's Ministry of Telecommunications, that the national club station 9Q0AR and its special call sign 9Q0HQ were finally given permission to operate again. This would be the first legal activity from 9Q land in several years. On QRZ.com, under the listing for 9Q08R, it suggests listening on 21.310 megahertz between 1000 and 1400 UTC for that station. We'll have more DX-related news near the end of this week's report. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Puget Sound Amateur Radio Club repeater, serving Seattle, Washington. The FCC has affirmed a $10,000 forfeiture order to Vicat Cherry for willfully and repeatedly violating Section 301 of the Communications Act by operating an unlicensed radio transmitter in Spring Valley, New York. Amateur Radio Newsline's Hal Rogers, K8CMD, has the story.
On October 22, 2010, the Enforcement Bureau's New York office issued a $10,000 notice of apparent liability for forfeiture to Vicat Cherry for operation of an unlicensed radio station on 90.5 megahertz. This from a location within a building leased by Mr. Cherry for the operation of his businesses known as PC Taxi Services, LLC, and PC Auto Repair, Incorporated. In response to the notice, Cherry urged cancellation or reduction of the proposed forfeiture because he claimed that he was not aware of what was going on at the station. Also, he was contacted by FCC agents without the knowledge of his attorney, and that the proposed forfeiture would pose an absolute hardship. But in turning away all of his claims, the FCC noted that an FCC station inspection is authorized under Section 303 of the Communications Act. As such, an inspection is not a criminal investigation, and any questioning that occurs as part of the fact-finding process in a non-custodial civil administrative proceeding does not require the presence of counsel. As to Cheery's alleged inability to pay the notice of apparent liability, the FCC noted that he failed to provide the required documentation to prove his claim even after being given additional time to do so. As such, the fine in the amount of $10,000 is warranted. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Hal Rogers, KHCMD.
Cheery was given the customary 30 days from the November 25th release date of the FCC findings to either pay the amount in full or to arrange to make installment payments. If he fails to do either, the matter can be turned to the Department of Justice for further action. The long-awaited TV Spectrum incentive auction has been postponed by a year. The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Tom Wheeler, delivered the news via his FCC blog Friday, December 6th, where he stated, quote, "I believe we can conduct a successful auction in the middle of 2015. Wheeler went on to say that getting the right policy and procedures for the auction is only half the job. He said that for the incentive auction to be a success, the FCC must also ensure that the operating systems and software to run it work from the moment the first bid is placed until the final broadcast station is relocated or repacked. The National Association of Broadcasters has lodged several concerns regarding the TV station repacking software. NAB executives met earlier with FCC engineering officials to object to the proposed calculations in the TV study software. At that time, the NAB questioned whether it indeed met the spirit of the law that all reasonable effort be made to preserve an over-the-air broadcast TV signal reach. Up until December 6, the FCC appeared to be determined to hold the auction in June of 2014. However, many details remain undetermined, including station repacking coordination along the borders with Canada and Mexico. The U.S. House of Representatives on Thursday, December 5th, passed the Innovation Act. This is a measure to reform an American patent system that is currently plagued by shell companies that make a business of filing nuisance lawsuits against productive businesses. Stopping the trolls requires changing the economic incentives that inspire the shakedown campaigns, which is something the 2011 America Invents Act failed to do. This time it might be different. The America Invents Act was stripped of most provisions that would have made a significant dent in the troll program. By contrast, the Innovation Act specifically addresses certain abusive patent assertion activities. The bill, which passed with bipartisan support, will now go to the Senate, where it's expected to pass, and to the White House, which is also in favor. However, it's not a cure-all to end all trolling. While the Innovation Act may kill off some of the more egregious trolls, it doesn't address the root cause of the patent problem, this being the granting of far too many low-quality patents. A low-quality patent is defined as those that cannot really claim to be wholly new or are obvious improvements over an existing technology. The ARRL Southeastern Division will have a new vice director as well as a new director January 1st. Following balloting in November, Doug Riemann, K4AC, was elected to a three-year term as director, and incumbent Vice Director Jim Millsap, WB4NWS, was declared elected to a new term. But a subsequent change in Millsap's job responsibilities made it necessary for him to resign from the Vice Director's post. That, too, will be effective January 1st. So in accordance with the ARRL Articles of Association, and after consultation with the director-elect, League President Kay Craigie, N3KN, has appointed Michael Lee, AA6ML, to fill the upcoming vacancy created by Millsap's decision to step aside. Lee currently serves as the Northern Florida Section Emergency Coordinator. The online ordering system is now accepting Hamvention 2014 orders, according to an announcement by Hamvention's webmaster Richard Reben, KE4WLE. You can now order your tickets or reserve a flea market spot. It's all online at hamvention.org. The Wireless Institute of Australia reports that a display of amateur radio targeted at the audience attending the first ever Sydney Mini Maker Fair has been deemed a success. For the event, the Wireless Institute of Australia joined with the Operation Helios High Altitude Balloon Team, the University of New South Wales student BlueSat Low Earth Orbiting Satellite Project, and the Manly Warringah Radio Society. The Manly Club's younger radio amateurs showed a cardboard retro-style ham radio exhibit, both commercial and homebrew transceivers, and demonstrated a portable APRS, or Automatic Packet Reporting System, station. John Press, VK2YGV of Operation Helios, put together a very interesting display on ham radio tracked ballooning. Maker fairs continue to grow in popularity worldwide as they attract an audience of hands-on tinkerers. These range from technical enthusiasts and scientists to garage builders of all ages and backgrounds. More about this gathering down under is on the web at makerfairsydney.com. The Amateur Radio Lighthouse Society is inviting radio amateurs worldwide to participate in its annual Lighthouse Christmas Lights QSO Party. The 2013 event is slated to begin at 0001 UTC December 21st and ends at 2359 UTC January 1st, 2014. All rules, operating guidelines, logging requirements, and prizes can be found at arlhs.com/LCL-2013. Hams Worldwide are invited to participate in Straight Key Night on Oscar. This annual Morse-only event is sponsored by AMSAT. In it, you can operate through any amateur satellite from 0001 through 2400 UTC January 1st, 2014, using a manual, non-electronic key. Bugs are now allowed as they are in similar ARRL events. There's no need to send in a log, but please nominate someone you worked for the title of Best Fist. Send your nomination to W2RS@AMSAT.org. This year's Straight Key Night on Oscar is being held in memory of Robert Morris, W2LV, whose amateur and professional career in radio literally spanned the era from Spark to Satellites. One of the first to work across the Atlantic in 1923, he also received Satellite DXCC No. 2 in 1979 and was featured in the PBS television documentary Empire of the Air. For the first time ever, in 2014, the United States will see two contest universities taking place in the same year. The first will be held to coincide with the Dayton Hamvention, Thursday, May 15th. This is the day before the Dayton Hamvention opens. The venue will be the Crown Plaza Hotel with 20 all-new presentations conducted by top contesters and station builders. Check the official Contest University website for registration and updated information. You'll find that at contestuniversity.com. And as an added bonus, a second Contest University will be held July 17th at the 2014 ARRL Centennial Convention in Hartford, Connecticut, called the Contest University Centennial. It will be an all-day event with six all-new presentations that will be different from those presented at the Dayton event. Registration for the ARRL Centennial Contest University will be handled through the ARRL. Please keep an eye on www.arrl.org for further updates. A new short video that shows how we record part of these weekly newscasts is now available on YouTube. Produced and hosted by Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, the two-minute presentation shows exactly what happens from the time Skeeter gets the request to anchor through to when he ships the completed audio file back to our studio in Santa Clarita, California. You can view Skeeter's video on the web at tinyurl.com/anchoring-newsline. And this is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Big changes have come to external world media from Russia. Amateur Radio Newsline Stefan Kinford, N8WB, has details.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed a decree abolishing RIA Novosti, one of the largest news agencies in that nation. It will be reborn as the global agency called Rossiya Segodnya, or in English as Russia Today. Russia Today will be headed by Dmitry Kiselyov, with its headquarters at the current RIA office. According to the official statement, the fledgling agency will focus on informing foreign audiences about Russia's policies and the way of life. President Putin gave the Cabinet of Ministers a month to plan all events necessary to help the newly created agency into existence and add it to the list of state-run strategic entities. Putin's decree also did away with the bulk of state media. It abolished the state fund of television and radio programs, placing it under control of all Russia's state television and radio broadcasting company. The same order has passed over the Russian Book Chamber, which is a federal scientific center, to the ITAR-TASS news agency. The decree, which came into force on Monday, December 9th, also affects the future of the radio stations, famous worldwide as the Voice of Russia. This is the external service, which was formerly known as Radio Moscow, prior to the collapse of the USSR. Effective on January 1, 2014, it will cease all broadcasting on the shortwave bands. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stefan Kinford, NAWB, in Wadsworth, Ohio.
You'll find more on the web at tinyurl.com/russia-media-changes. When NASA's Juno spacecraft flew past the Earth this past October 9th, it received a boost in speed of more than 7.3 kilometers per second. This set it on course for a July 4, 2016 rendezvous with the planet Jupiter. During the flyby, Juno's WAVES instrument, which is tasked with measuring radio and plasma waves in Jupiter's magnetosphere, recorded amateur radio signals from here on Earth as part of a public outreach effort involving ham radio operators from around the world. Hams were invited to say hi to Juno by coordinating radio transmissions that carried the same Morse-coded message, HI. Operators from every continent, including Antarctica, participated. The data returned from the spacecraft was then processed at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. The results can be seen and heard in a short video clip posted at tinyurl.com/juno-ham-radio. Some good news for the builders and controllers of the missing Wren satellite. The bird has been found on orbit, as we hear from RSGB newsreader Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
Patrick Kirkden, M0ZPK from Thanet Radio and Electronics Club, helped the developers of the Wren SSTV satellite when it was thought to have stopped working. He was able to find the satellite and record some of its telemetry, giving the Wren team updated location information, which they've now released to other amateurs to use. These include new commands, decode software, and video describing how to do it. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, in Nottingham, in the United Kingdom.
More information on the locating and condition of Wren is on the web at amsat-uk.org. A follow-up to a story from earlier this year on an ambitious space project, the goal of which is to send volunteers on a one-way trip to Mars. On December 10th, the backers of this mission unveiled plans for the first private unmanned mission to the Red Planet. This as a robotic prelude to human colonization that will launch in 2018. The nonprofit Mars One Foundation says that it's completed deals with Lockheed Martin Space Systems and Surrey Satellite Technology Limited to draw up mission concept studies for the private robotic flight to Mars. Under the plan, Lockheed Martin will build the Mars One lander and Surrey Satellite Technology Limited will build a communications satellite. Bas Lansdorp is a Mars One co-founder and its chief executive officer. In a statement, he said that these will be the first private spacecraft to Mars and their successful arrival and operation will be a historic accomplishment. He added that his organization is very excited to have contracted Lockheed Martin and Surrey Satellite Technology Limited for its first mission to the Red Planet. The Islands on the Air project says that it urgently needs developers to work on coding for its IOTA website. Volunteers should be reasonably familiar with MySQL, PHP, and JavaScript. The code is version controlled using GitHub, so familiarity with this would also be useful. The Islands on the Air project operates on a tiny budget, so the role is primarily for volunteers. Please contact iota.online@rsgb.org.uk if you think you may be able to help. The Northern Corridor Radio Group in Perth, Australia is going to try to bridge the tropospheric ducting gap to South Africa, this by using the latest chirp modulation techniques on its 144.950 MHz VK6RIO 2-meter beacon. Keith Bainbridge, VK6RK, is a spokesman for the Australia group. He's quoted as saying that if his group can get someone in the right location in South Africa, then perhaps it can help with some of the equipment. The transatlantic and trans-Indian Ocean two-way contacts via 144 megahertz via tropospheric ducting are still the most challenging terrestrial frontiers on VHF. Many attempts have been made, but to date, no real success. In DX, the ARRL DXCC desk has approved the 2013 Rwanda 9X0XA and the just-concluded November 20th through December 10th VU7AG Lakshadweep Islands operations for DXCC credit. Once you have confirmation, you'll be able to apply these toward your DXCC standing. F5MVB is planning to be active as 5V7MP from Togo sometime in 2014. Look for more details to be forthcoming in January. G3XAQ as 5X1XA is expected to return again to Kampala, Uganda between February 25th and March 16th. His activity will be CW only, including the RSGB Commonwealth Contest March 8th and 9th. QSL 5X1XA via G3SWH. DK1AX and his wife DK1MA will be operational as A35AX on a holiday-style de-expedition from Tongatapu Island and Vavao Island between February 24th and March 7th. Activity will be on CW, SSB, and RTTY, QSL via the OQRS on Clublog. YV5IAL will be on the airstroke CE2 from Chile between January 2nd and the 30th. He plans to operate PSK-31 daily on 14070.15 and occasionally on 10, 15, and 40 meters using both PSK-31 and SSB, QSL via his home call sign, direct or via the Bureau. LW9EOC will be active stroke HK0 from San Andres Island between April 18th and the 25th of 2014. Operations will be on 80 through 10 meters using CW and SSB, QSL via LW9EOC. And finally, Saturday, December 7th was Skywarn Recognition Day, and in celebration, the Weather Channel aired a special report that included a live interview with Lynn Bianco, KN4YZ. He's the Assistant Section Emergency Coordinator for Georgia ARES that works with the National Weather Service. The remote broadcast originated over Skype from the National Weather Service office in Peachtree City, Georgia. The Weather Channel has given us permission to use part of the interview with Bianco, who explained to the public what Skywarn does.
We actually helped get the ground truths for the National Weather Service in times like this. They really need to know what's actually happening out there. With communications cut, potentially with down power lines or downed phone lines, there's got to be a way of getting the information back to the National Weather Service and out to other emergency service people.
Bianco then described how Skywarn works with both the National Weather Service and the National Hurricane Center during the tropical storm season.
Basically, we wanted to provide the ground truth of what's really happening out there. As you know, and your viewers know, the Doppler is a wonderful tool for seeing what's out there, but what's really happening on the ground underneath that Doppler? What kind of flooding is happening? What kind is there really a tornado? Even though the Doppler says there's rotation, maybe it's on the ground, maybe it's not. But we're trying to provide the ground truths.
Bianco not only explained the fun aspect of Skywarn Recognition Day and how it involves not only those at National Weather Service locations, but the entire worldwide ham radio community. You can see the entire 2-minute, 45-second broadcast online at tinyurl.com/weather-channel-skywarn. And before we forget, our sincere thanks to the Weather Channel and its technical production manager, Andy Funk, KB7UV, for making the audio available so that we could bring it to you. But thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, TWIT TV, the Weather Channel, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You'll find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in South Mississippi, saying 7-3, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights are reserved.